You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Special guests and off topics in this segment, anything goes. You're listening to 3PM.
All right, guys, we have the specialist of guests, my beautiful, lovely younger sister, Heather. This all started because I gave her a call one day. I was driving across Portland. I was stuck in traffic, and I was like, I just want to talk to my sister. So I called her, and her and I went down a rabbit hole, and we talked for like 2.5 hours. And she was just telling me all these things, and the way she was telling me and her ability to remember things and stuff, I was like, dude, can you call us sometime and just tell us on pod? And she was like, sure, yeah. Just like give me a day heads up and I'll do my best. So that's what's happening right now. She's going to break down a super famous, crazy case and kind of go over some of the crazier details I didn't previously know. So you guys might be familiar with this case, but we'll see if you know all the crazy details. So Heather, what's up? How are you?
Hey guys, and hey listeners. Like Charlie said, my name's Heather. But first of all, I just want to thank you guys for having me back on. 3AM, you've been really good to me. So thank
always.
You for this opportunity.
Always.
Cool. So let me ask you guys first, how familiar are you guys with this case?
Can you kind of preface it first?
Like which case?
Sure. Yeah, like
Sean case? Doesn't even know.
Okay. So the case that we're talking about tonight is going to be the case of Elisa Lam. She's a 21-year-old girl from Vancouver, Canada, who took a trip to California and goes missing in LA.
I would say surface level familiar.
Okay.
I've seen the Watch Mojos on this.
Nice. Very cool. So I basically took copious notes last night. So I pretty much know everything from the docuseries that's listed on Netflix. So I'm not, you know, an expert in the sense that I didn't follow this case very closely or anything, but I am pretty familiar with the docuseries at least. So I can answer some questions if you guys have questions throughout it.
She knows more than us, and that's all that matters.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Sweet. Okay, so you guys want to just like jump right into a brief summary of the case itself, kind of the details of the disappearance, and then we can then dive into the coincidences that surround this case and why it's such a fad in social media.
Yeah, that sounds perfect, especially for people where this might be new information. So,
right. Okay. So there's this 21-year-old girl from Chinese descent who her parents immigrated over from Hong Kong, okay? And they moved to Vancouver, Canada. So her name's Elisa, and she decides to take a trip to California. She wants to hit the West Coast. She wants to do San Diego, LA, San Francisco, like the whole shebang. And so she does her San Diego part. She heads up to LA. She stays at the Cecil Hotel. So the history of that hotel is pretty infamous in itself, and we'll get into that a little bit later of how many crazy things have happened at this hotel and why it's kind of the most haunted hotel definitely on the West Coast, but I don't know about the world. But anyway, so she's staying at the Cecil. She goes missing about 20 days after she's missing. She's actually found in the water tanks system of this hotel. And so this is at a time in the world where web sleuthing viral videos are just kind of blowing up. Not to say that web sleuthing started at this time, but it's ramping up to become more popular. And so the public has a huge part in this case because people got attached to, you know, the missing person report. And not only because of web sleuthing in itself, but they got attached because of this bizarre video that was posted on the LAPD website. And this video is the last known video of Elisa Lam's final moments of life. And she's acting, some would say, pretty bizarre in this video, and it's about a 4-minute video. So the public just goes haywire and really wanting to know the details and solve the mystery, essentially.
Real quick, you guys have both seen the video?
Yeah.
Yep.
If you're listening to this and you haven't seen the video, it is 100% a must, but do it your own discretion because it is truly creepy.
It's bone chilling.
It is. It is such a weird experience to watch. And like, she's not acting like, to me, what seems like irrational or like,
oh, definitely not.
It seems almost possessed, almost paranormal. It's so creepy.
To me, it seemed paranoid. It almost seems like she is.
You know the part where she starts like bending her hands and like putting them above her head? That's not just paranoid. There's something else happening.
I don't remember seeing that part of the video.
Oh, should we watch it real quick?
I mean,
No.
We'll watch it. We'll watch it later. I'll catch up. I only remember the part where she goes in the elevator. And like is looking out like she's like being followed.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything about like.
Dude, you got to watch the whole 4 minutes.
Okay. Maybe I'm like that.
DJ?
No, I was just reiterating like the feeling it caused when I watched it. I remember checking my surroundings. Seriously.
Yeah.
Like making sure I was safe. So it's truly something to behold.
And I don't know if you were going to cover this, sis, but one of my favorite details is no one realized anything bad had gone on until they started complaining about the taste of the water.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a huge part of this case.
Were you going to cover that later?
Yeah, we definitely can. I mean, we could even talk about it right now.
Sorry, I'll let you do your thing.
No, it's totally fine. I mean, that in itself is just such a disturbing part of this case. I mean, imagine owning a hotel or a business and that happening. I mean, it would just imagine being the people that you're drinking and brushing your teeth and showering in this water. It's just horrendous. You know, that's to me is one of the more disturbing parts of this case.
For real.
Personally. For sure.
So, yeah. So, and I guess it is a good segue into that part because, you know, we have Elisa Lam going missing. Suddenly people start noticing the tap water. And then that's when they discover the body because there was complaints about low water pressure. So maintenance went up there and discovered Elisa Lam in the water tank, naked and floating face up, which is actually not common for a drowning case.
That sounds weird to me.
Hmm. Yeah, definitely. So exactly that, guys. So like the case on face value alone is just bizarre. It's just weird. You have this bizarre video, you have these bizarre circumstances, you have this tragic case of people drinking the water. And then on top of that, you have this general sense in the public that we can solve this case. So now you have everyone's input, not just professionals who are looking into the case like LAPD detectives and so on and so forth, but now you have, you know, anyone and everyone being like, well, here's my theory of what happened and here's my theory and here's probably what happened and here's what I found. And so this is probably what happened. Is LAPD involved? Is Cecil Hotel involved? You know, I mean, it was just an explosion of people putting forth their two cents about this case. So yeah, that's basically like a brief summary. I guess I don't really want to get in too much right now of, you know, my opinion about the case. But yeah, are there any questions so far?
Nope, that's a good summary.
Okay, so essentially what I kind of want to talk about really quickly is the history behind the Cecil Hotel, because it is just absolutely fascinating. And so let's talk about the Cecil right now. Right now it sits in downtown Los Angeles, and it is pretty much in the middle of Skid Row. So Skid Row is 56 blocks in Los Angeles of modern day Wild Wild West, which is 8,000 to 10,000 homeless people. And Skid Row's been around for over 100 years. So they had, in this docuseries, they had a bunch of professionals speaking to the history of Skid Row. And in my opinion, aside from Elisa, the star of the show is Dr. Doug Mungin is his last name. And he's a Skid Row historian. He was absolutely fascinating. But, you know, he goes to describe the kind of danger that Skid Row really faces every single day and every single night. Like, you walk out into Skid Row and you're talking like rows and rows and rows of homeless camp. And this isn't to pass judgment onto the homeless population at all. This is record keeping of what happens in Skid Row. I mean, it's daily rapes, it's daily murders, it's daily drug overdoses. So it is a pretty dangerous area that the Cecil is located in currently. And then,
dude, there's highlighter and you are more prepared than we have ever been
for any episode.
Yeah, I love it.
Dude, I'm not joking you. I have like 7 pages worth. Not only did I do 7 pages, but I typed up a 5-page like really key points that I should hit. And then a summary breakdown of episode by episode of like what it's about. Key points in this episode?
It's really peer-reviewed too, right?
I owe you at least like $15 for this, dude.
I love it. I love it. Sorry, real quick. I don't know if you were going to touch on this, but Cecil Hotel, what's like the rep? Like, was it a nice hotel? You know?
Right. Okay. So when it first was made, it was made, I think, in 1919. Yeah, in 1919, there is one of the biggest industrial booms in the world in downtown Los Angeles. This is where, you know, Hollywood's starting to become a thing and everything like that. So when the Cecil was made, it took $1 million at that time to make it. And it was like this really high-end, fancy, schmancy hotel. That was the original view for the Cecil. Then the Great Depression hits. It starts turning into a hotel and an extended living situation where people can pay really dirt cheap money just to stay there for long periods of time. And so that's really where its purpose changed dramatically. It goes from this grand, beautiful thing to this dump of a place in the Great Depression. But as far as the history of why the Cecil is super haunted, there's just a ton of tragedies recorded at this place, starting, I think the earliest was in 1931, is the earliest reported suicide. 1934, this person slashes their own throat in one of the rooms. 1962, this woman named Pauline jumps out of a window, and she actually hit someone on the way down. 1964, there is this lady, they called her Pigeon Goldie. She was attacked, raped, stabbed midday in her room. Then the 1980s, Skid Row becomes tougher. There's more extended living stay there. So, I mean, you're talking $2-3 a night to stay at the Cecil. So they had this character in the docuseries who basically has lived on Skid Row for over 30 years and stayed at the Cecil all through, you know, late 70s, through the 80s, through the 90s, right? And he was describing, I never went past the 6th floor because that's where all the murders happen. That's where you could get tossed out a window like whatever. So it just becomes a real tough place. And then obviously in the 80s, the most famous, you know, scary thing about the Cecil Hotel is that the Night Stalker would stay at the Cecil. So Richard Ramirez, when he was terrorizing Los Angeles, you know, he would stop it, in the docuseries, it stated he would stop in the alleyway, remove his bloody clothing, walk 14 flights of stairs in bloodstained underwear up to his bedroom where he was paying $14 a night.
And everyone's just like, oh, that's there's Rich.
Yeah. No one said anything. No one just blinked an eye. They just let him do his thing. Cause you're talking about Skid Row, you know, this is like you're seeing crazy stuff every single day. So Richard Ramirez stayed there. Another famous one that I didn't really know the history about was in 1991, this journalist from Austria decides to stay at the Cecil. Now, Jack Underweger is his name. And he was committed for rape and murder on multiple women in Austria. Then he ends up getting released. So he goes to Los Angeles. Immediately, the murders stop in Austria and start back up in LA.
Sus.
And his target was sex workers. So he was a journalist. So he even arranged these ride-alongs with LAPD to learn about the red light district. He would take multiple sex workers up into his room in the Cecil, rape, stab, murder, strangle, torture them. So there's just kind of this ominous presence of pain and suffering and haunting, I don't know, around the Cecil itself. It's a creepy place to be. You know, I've been inside the Cecil before, I think twice. And it's just like, just knowing what's happened here is just, it's worse than a graveyard, right? Because at a graveyard, yeah, there's a bunch of just bad juju soul-wise, you know, for multiple souls being there. But being in a place where you know so much destruction has happened, it's just, it's a different level of, like, heaviness, you know?
For sure. Yeah, if any place has bad juju, it's the Cecil.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, that's kind of, does that answer your question, DJ, of why the Cecil kind of has this, like, reputation?
I didn't even know what the rep was to begin with and how it evolved over time. So
they did just release a Cecil Hotel documentary on Netflix, too.
That's what Heather's referencing.
That's what you're, like, talking about? Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's a 4-episode docuseries, and it's called Crime Scene, The Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel, in case any of the listeners want to go watch and haven't yet. I do highly recommend watching it, though, because it's only 4 episodes. And it's super educational. Like, you know, when we were talking earlier before about how the video made you guys feel and kind of what you remember about this case is pretty much what the rest of the general public feels without knowing all of the facts about this case. You know, once you kind of understand what happened here, then things can kind of get easier to take in. And understand fully why it may not be such a creepy thing. I know that's not the best for this podcast, but
I'm like, no,
my personal opinion. Yeah, I definitely think that the Cecil's haunted, but I'm not sure if it's a paranormal experience. It very well could be actually some paranormal factors in the night that she went missing. There's no doubt about that. She actually got off of the elevator on the 14th floor, which is interesting because that's the floor that Richard Ramirez lived on. So, I guess we can just talk, or I can tell you guys about some of the crazy coincidences surrounding this case.
Please.
Wait, just to preface a tiny bit. So,
yeah,
she goes missing. People start tasting this brown water. They go open the they go open the tank. They find her body, and they have no idea what really happened. Then the security footage gets released, and they're like, "Okay, what's going on?" Right? And so,
exactly,
what do you know at the time? The official statement was just like she killed herself.
So that I guess that's not the official statement. The official statement is that her death, at first they were kind of toying, is it an accident or is it undetermined?
Mm.
Right? Because we don't really know what happened here. So that would make one believe that it's undetermined. But in the end, they actually ruled it an accident due to drowning. Huh. Even though there weren't the common signs of drowning in the autopsy, which is inflated lungs, foam within the air pipes. She was found face up, right?
Not which common.
Normal drownings, people are found face down.
Who was running this autopsy?
Who was running it? The LAPD.
Yeah, like, who released the statement of like, oh yeah, I was drowning?
LAPD.
It's like,
I think it was more just like sweep under the rug because there were no other conclusions. This is what it sounds like so far with what I know, which isn't a lot.
Right. I mean, and that's kind of why there was so much suspicion and conspiracies at this time, because the public wasn't making sense to them. They're like, okay, well, she was found face up, right? And there wasn't any foam in the air pipes, and you're on the fence whether it's undetermined or an accident. Like, which one is it? How do you know that she drowned? Is it possible that she was killed and then placed in the water tank? Is that possible? Right?
Mm.
So that's why the public was like, the LA's PD is absolutely covering something up here, and the Cecil Hotel's involved in it.
Dang. So let's jump into the weird things.
Yeah, these weird coincidences, I'm not joking you, this is exactly like what the phone conversation was with Charlie the other day that he mentioned. This is the entire like content of our phone call, is how bizarre these coincidences are in this case, because with however many murder cases I've looked into and followed, it's like the chances of all of these things happening is it's just crazy. Like
mathematically, it's mind blowing, and like you'll see why.
Yeah, I want to know what the coincidences are. To like,
I was yelling on the phone, bro.
Okay, so the first major coincidence that they mention, and this particular one is due to a lot of web sleuthers doing their homework and looking into this case more closely. Mm-hmm. So some of these web sleuthers found this movie called Dark Water.
Okay.
Dark Water is a horror movie that was remade in 2005. Keep in mind that this case happened in 2013.
Okay.
So this movie comes out far before the Elisa Lam case. The movie is about a mother and a daughter who move into this dilapidated apartment. I think it was in LA, but don't quote me on that. The daughter, this little girl, is wearing this red jacket. And in fact, her whole entire outfit looks pretty similar to what Elisa Lam was wearing the night that she went missing. And it was exactly similar to the clothes that were found at the bottom of the water tank. So this little girl's wearing this red jacket. Very looks very similar to what Elisa Lam was wearing. And in the movie, people find that the water in this apartment building starts going brown. So it's part of the horror, like the tap water's running brown, the shower's running brown, which parallels with this case. And then in the movie, the little girl fell into the water tank on accident and died. So it's very similar in the sense of the Elisa Lam case, where it's like this, you know, dilapidated place and then the running water and then someone actually being found in a water tank. Like, you know, considering that movie came out 8 years before the case, is just kind of bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
So people go, now people are thinking, okay, is there some psychopath who's like trying to play out this Dark Water movie, right?
That's terrifying.
It was pretty bizarre. I mean, it may not sound as exciting, but if you really think about it, it's like, dang, what are the chances, you know, that the major points of the movie are kind of, you know, parallel here?
I mean, it at least points to the possibility of a copycat.
Mm.
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it would be foolish to not ask yourself, like, is it, is it connected?
Oh, yeah. Because
you got to rule it out, right? So this particular coincidence is the one that got me the hardest, I think. I almost threw my paper at the wall the third time I'm watching this docuseries because I'm like, this one is just so trippy. But days after Elisa Lam's body was found, this crazy outbreak of tuberculosis spreads throughout Skid Row. So everyone in Skid Row is needing to be tested for tuberculosis. So they showed this document in the docuseries by David Barnegan. And this document is basically explaining the testing needing done for tuberculosis in Skid Row at this time. And the name of one of the tests that is being distributed is called the Lamb Elisa test, spelled exactly the same as Elisa Lamb's name. So Elisa Lamb, her last name is L-A-M, and her first name is E-L-I-S-A. Well, this test, the name of this test is called the Lamb Elisa test.
Wait, what? This happened before?
Right
her,
after.
This, or right after?
This happened days after her body was found.
What the f-
We don't know why it was named that?
Nope.
And it was before, like, the hype of it all?
No, it was pretty much during the hype of it all.
Wait, so there's no actual explanation for why the test is called that?
No.
Why would they call it that?
But I haven't researched into it because it just takes you to all these theories of why people think that.
I have a theory.
I have no idea why this test is called that.
I have a theory.
Okay.
This is a theme conspiracy theories point to a lot. So Heather's giving you credible things. I'm about to give you BS. But there is a type of magic called sigil magic. And sigil magic draws a lot of its power. It's like doing ceremonies, but in the open. So if you can do like evil acts and give clues and show what you're doing, it gives more power to the ritual.
Mm, yeah.
And so doing things like putting little Easter eggs like, oh, her name's Elisa Lamb. Let's call it Lamb Elisa. Like backwards, mm-hmm. flipping it. And like putting that out there and like pretty much kind of showing your hand gives the ritual way more power.
It's almost like the secret, like speaking it into existence.
Mm-hmm. But like
kind of
badly.
See, at the very least, I feel like that's so disrespectful. Like at the very least, like who pulled the trigger on that?
Say, let's just call this tuberculosis test Lamb Elisa.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good idea. Didn't that girl just die like 2 days ago?
Yeah,
that's fine. No one will notice.
Something really interesting, too, to add to this name thing is that Elisa Lamb studied in Canada at the University of British Columbia. Okay, so she wasn't in the research. I don't think she even was near the particular program at this college. But it's interesting that the University of British Columbia has a well-known tuberculosis program called the Center for Tuberculosis Research. It's like very well-known. So, and it didn't really mention, I feel like they would have mentioned in the docuseries if she was involved in that program at all, but it didn't seem like she was involved in that program. It seemed more like her degree was elsewhere. And I could be completely wrong on that, but that's the only thing that I could think about having any sort of connection to this name, because I don't know if the test came from the University of British Columbia. I don't know anything, but it's just interesting that she goes to this university that happens to be one of the leading researchers in tuberculosis, you know? So it's just bizarre. It's weird.
That's the coincidence
that just got me the most. Like, it's called the Lamb Elisa test. What?
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. I have benefited from therapy in a way that it's allowed me to feel a lot more lightness in my heart, my head, my emotions. If that's something that you are needing, if that's something that's missing, give therapy a try. Give BetterHelp a try. We want to hook you up by getting it off your chest and it be a little lighter on the wallet. Go ahead and visit betterhelp.com/3am and you can get 10% off your first month. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/3AM.
Something is creeping, don't follow it down.
Let me introduce you to Barry Clue, an authorised financial advisor from New Zealand and a very special kind of stain on humanity.
He was a very knowledgeable young guy.
He was a registered financial advisor.
Type of guy that was bending over backwards to help you.
Now, you could be forgiven for thinking that Barry sounds like a great guy, and you'd be right. Well, right up until the point when you're wrong.
That was all fictitious.
You stole from my son, who has a disability.
Chris never knew. He died believing that we're all taken care of.
A psychopath is somebody who lacks empathy, acts impulsively. I think there's a strong case that Barry might be all of those things, actually.
To find out how Barry Clue stole over $15 million from 81 victims, subscribe to Clueless, The Long Con. That's Clueless, spelt K-L-O-O-G-H-L-E-S-S.
I have nothing to
It's probably
about
the
that.
Magic, the magic thing, I bet. What is it called again?
Sigil magic.
Sigil magic.
Yeah.
Just on Skid Row.
Yeah.
There you go. Solved. Okay, another coincidence is, and this one is, I mean, take it with a grain of salt, whatever. The Last Bookstore. Okay, that is the name of a bookstore in Los Angeles. On the day that Elisa Lam went missing, she visited this bookstore and purchased a few books. She was afraid that she wasn't going to be able to carry these books, like they were going to be too heavy. So two employees from the bookstore hand-delivered a box of books to the Cecil Hotel. The cops thought it could be a lead at some point. It wasn't. But web sleuthers were like, okay, well, if Elisa Lam was there on the last day, let's check out this bookstore and see if there's anything fishy with it. So they get on their website, they go to the registrant information section, which is like a registry essentially of everything. They find this zip code, okay? They type in this zip code to Google Maps and it leads them to the cemetery where Elisa Lam was buried.
Wait, what? So, where's this zip code found?
Yeah, trace that back one more time.
This zip code is found literally like on a registry list on the website. So it's, you'll have to watch the docuseries to actually see the page. It just has a bunch of registry information, which means it's registered tabs, right? So it could be a purchase. And if it's Elisa Lam's purchase and she gave that zip code, right, then it could be in the general area of where the cemetery is. It's just interesting that when you're on the website and you copy and paste that specific zip code, it pops up the exact address for the cemetery that she's buried at.
That is a right? little weird.
I see what you mean by take it with a grain of salt.
So it could either be, well, it's the same zip code as where she lives. But why would it pinpoint you exact? Like it pops up that little red
like
teardrop
within
thing,
the
right?
cemetery.
Exactly on the cemetery.
That's weird.
So Google knows, dude. They were behind the TB test. Google did it.
Definitely. Right? Definitely.
I mean, Google's involved. LAPD, Cecil Hotel.
It's all a big conspiracy. For real.
So being at the Cecil itself is kind of a coincidence because we were talking on, you know, the history of the Cecil and its bad reputation. So it's like, of course it's at the Cecil and nowhere else in LA, right? So even just simply being at the Cecil, that's a coincidence in itself. Okay, this one's interesting. So it's just by coincidence that this guy from Mexico has a stage name named Morbid. So he's a hard death metal musician and his stage name is Morbid. Well, he has a few songs. So he stayed at the Cecil. So web sleuthers were like, let's look at any video that people have on the Cecil Hotel and see if we can find out anything about a relation to Elisa Lam. So they find this guy named Morbid. He's like videotaping himself inside the Cecil. He's like, yeah, what up? I'm staying at the Cecil. And so people start looking into this morbid guy. And he has this song that was released a few days after Elise's body was found. And the preface, or sorry, the basis of this song is that a woman is running for her life throughout the entire song, and then eventually and ultimately she's captured, tortured, and murdered, right? So people go mind explosion because that video kind of, it can, like Sean mentioned, it can seem like she was paranoid. She was paranoid about being chased, mm-hmm. right? She's looking outside of the elevator door, like left and right, and she's like hiding in corners and just seems very scared. So people are like, why is this morbid guy who stayed at the Cecil releasing this song that this girl's running for her life and then is ultimately murdered, right?
It's the original.
So they start looking into other songs. This other song, this one's pretty weird. He has these lyrics in this song that says, I'm thinking China, okay? Which Elisa Lam's Chinese. And the whole song is about a girl drowning. So he basically has like a part in one of the verses or whatever where it's like, I'm thinking China. And then the whole rest of the song is like, she drowned, like water in her lungs and like all this crazy stuff.
What does the like, I'm thinking China line have to do with?
Elisa's Chinese.
She's full Chinese.
So then we're saying he wrote this song about her?
Maybe he's capitalizing about like on the situation to try and like gain notoriety. Mm. That's what I think of when it comes to that guy specifically.
Mm. I know Elisa Lam's Chinese, but it's like assuming that he wasn't like tying this song to her, like what did that Chinese line have to do with the rest of the song?
Yeah. Yeah, and keep in mind, guys, this is in 2013, which is totally different than 2021. You know, even in 2013, when viral videos are like, you know, still somewhat new and everything. I mean, it was shocking to a ton of people to see someone like Morbid being so open with his choice to be who he was with the darkness, you know? And that's my opinion. And when you watch this docuseries, you're kind of in that feeling already because you have, you know, you're just in this time zone that they set you in. And I think why it was disturbing for people is because, you know, they're doing the research and they're like, Morbid's connected to the hotel. Morbid has these crazy lyrics. Mm-hmm. He must be involved because there's something bigger going on here, right? Mm-hmm.
The subject matter per se isn't surprising to me when it comes to like a death metal or black metal band.
Mm.
Like they be talking about that subject matter all the time.
Yeah.
But the fact that he stayed there, what like before?
Right.
Her? So how long before her?
A year.
Okay.
So he wasn't checked in when she disappeared?
He was not, but people didn't make that clear when they did their web sleuthing on him. You know, they took that little bit and they ran with it.
Yeah.
The reason why I put it in the list of coincidences is because it's like, what are the odds that he releases a video a few days after Elise's body is found of a, you know, like what are the
drowning
odds, like the timing of it?
Running
it's
away.
Just like,
yeah.
It's a little sus.
At the very least, it's a coincidence.
Yeah. And it's just interesting because it's like, if he had chosen to put that video out a few days, like, or a few months later, even, it would be like, it wouldn't be as much of an explosion as it was, right? So it's just unfortunate that that's the coincidence. Because I'm not going to say poor Morbid, because quite honestly, it's like, yeah, he had some shitty things happen to him, but whatever. This isn't about Morbid.
Yeah.
But the web sleuthers went after him like crazy. Like,
I bet.
If you come back to LA, we will fucking kill you.
Yeah,
you
know? Witch hunt is real online and doxing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he got wrecked. So that's unfortunate. Okay, another coincidence. It's not the craziest thing in the world, but it's just another coincidence. the autopsy report. So Dr. Tovar, he accidentally marks on the autopsy report could not be determined. So there's this section in any autopsy, right, that says manner of death. You have to state
right.
the manner yeah. that they died. He marked could not be determined. And then there's a mark underneath it that says error with the date 6/18/13. Next to that, he marks accident by drowning. And the date on that, X, says apparently 6/15/13. So people go crazy about this because they're studying this case like real time. And I mean, they're going over every single inch of what the LAPD releases because they don't trust the LAPD. So they're going through this autopsy and they're like, why would you mark could not be determined on 6/18? Say it was an accident, but 3 days earlier you marked accident by drowning. Like, which one is it? It just further proves that you guys are just sweeping something under the rug, right?
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
You come to find out that if you really zoom into that date, it says 6/18, not 6/15. I can see how people would think that it says 6/15. The pen must have gone out or something, you know, while he was making this like loop. But I think it says 6/18. Other people would disagree with me, but it's a coincidence because like, it's just funny how all these little things happened that are big deals because it was one of the biggest cases in our time. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, what are the odds that he just was human that day and accidentally made that mistake and the pen happens to go out during his loop and you know what I mean? And it's just blown out of
proportion. Yeah, it's like, what are the odds with that happening at the same time as all of these other coincidences happening that is making it so much more concerning?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hmm.
Another thing is communication errors. So a huge reason why people were convinced that it's a foul play case is because the LAPD released a press conference stating when they went to go retrieve Elisa Lam's body, they found the hatch door on top of the water tank closed. So this is important because if Elisa jumped in herself, depending on that water level, it would be very, 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 very difficult to get that hatch door back over yourself. Like, let's say she was to die by suicide, mm-hmm. right? That was her plan. Let's say she jumped in. Well, then she has to lift herself out, drag a 20-pound iron hatch door over, and then pull it and close it as she jumps back into the water. So that would be, if not impossible, incredibly difficult.
Right.
So the hatch door being on or off is actually super important, right? LAPD claims that when they went to go retrieve her body, the hatch door was closed. So that may be true, though, because I caught this one pretty early within the docuseries. I was like, okay, something's not matching up here, and I know exactly what it is. So LAPD didn't find Elisa Lam's body. Who found it? The maintenance worker, right?
Right.
So how did he find it? And he doesn't really come out and state it until court. And so after everything's the dust settles and everything, Elisa Lam's family files a civil suit against CISO Hotel saying you could have done better to prevent people from getting on the roof. You could have notified someone about Elisa Lam's bizarre behavior days leading up to this disappearance. So they basically filed a wrongful death suit. Well, it came out in court that Santiago Lopez, who's the maintenance guy, when he discovered Elisa Lam's body, the door was open. The hatch door was open on the water tank. So he must have closed it and then LAPD found it closed, right? So there was a major miscommunication there. It seems pretty simple, right? Like, when the press or when web sleuthers or whoever are going crazy saying, the hatch door was closed, the hatch door was closed, oh my gosh, that means foul play. The LAPD should have been like, wait a minute, was the hatch door closed? Because we didn't find the body. It seems like they should have been like...
addressed it.
Santiago, what was the hatch door when you found it? And he would have said, open. And then they could come out and say, hey, we misspoke in the press conference. It was actually found open, you know. And they could have squashed that one. But it's just a crazy coincidence that all of these miscommunication errors from LAPD caused them to be the number one suspect in the public's eyes, essentially.
Mm. Yeah. It's just like either negligence or more likely in this scenario, guilt.
Yeah.
Probably for lazy police work. And no offense to LAPD, but I mean, come on. It seems like a no-brainer. Anyway, those are my major coincidences surrounding the Elisa Lam case, Darkwater, and the outbreak of TB. I can't get over those.
Yeah, those are insane.
That outbreak of TB is so wild. Yeah. Like, naming the thing after her.
That's concerning to me.
Like, where did that come from?
And her working in a lab that, like, specializes in TB.
That stands out to me the most.
I don't know if she worked in the lab or not, but she went to the same university who has the major center for tuberculosis research. Yeah. I guess I kind of want to share my opinion about, you know, why or how Elisa Lam ended up in the water tank. Because that seems to be the leading question still till this day. No one knows. You know, there's no video of it. It's like, was she carried and dumped in? Is it possible? Yes. No. Right. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of want to share, after watching the docuseries, kind of where I stand on that.
Let's hear it.
Okay. So something that I learned within this docuseries is actually two major things. One, Elisa Lam suffered from bipolar type 1 disorder, right? So that's a pretty severe version of bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. So severe, in fact, that people do have psychotic features and display psychotic features when they suffer from bipolar type 1, meaning hallucinations, hearing voices, you know. It's possible for people to experience that when you're bipolar. The second major thing I learned was Elisa displayed pretty bizarre behavior on the days leading up to her disappearance. Some of the cops speak to a few events of what happened that display bizarre behavior. So, for example, one of these cops says, Elisa went out to a live recording out in Burbank, and she was very adamant to get this handwritten letter that she had written to the host. Mm-hmm. So adamant, in fact, that security had to kick her out and remove her from the property. So the autopsy report showed that there were low levels of the medication she was supposed to be on in her system at the time that they sent in the tox reports, right? So what that told investigators is and also another thing, her medicine bottles that she left behind had more pills in it than it should have. You know, they were able to be like, okay, it got refilled on this date, but there's more in here than the day she went missing. So they were led to believe that she had stopped taking her medication sometime on arrival of LA, and she was supposed to stay in LA for a few days. So she could have very much, you know, already been going through an episode, a psychotic break, days before this even happened, which would kind of explain. And according to one of my favorite people who spoke on this docuseries, her name is Dr. Judy Ho. And she is a clinical forensic neuropsychologist. So she was able to take all this information about Elisa Lam, considering the fact that she has this bipolar disorder, understand her behavior before, you know, the day she goes disappearing, and make a determination that if she was not on her medication, which is what we think, then it would make perfect sense that she would be acting that way in the elevator. Mm. Like, to her, it was like a no-brainer. That's okay. The explanation for the bizarre behavior in the elevator. So that kind of brought some closure to my chest, because I think that's the most, you know...
logical.
Yeah, it's the most logical, but it was the most disturbing part of the case back in the day when I didn't know anything about it. It was like, man, that elevator video is really weird, you know? So weird that it looks haunting, or it looks like supernatural, or it looks, you know, and all these things. But hearing, you know, this doctor's testimony on her opinion of the bizarre behavior that bipolar type 1 can, you know, instigate in a lot of individuals, it kind of brought some peace to my chest, being like, oh man, she was probably having a psychotic break. Yeah. That's probably what the case was, you know? And how she ended up on the roof, I don't know. She could have, you know, gone up the stairwell or up the fire escape. Why she chose to get into the tank, I don't know. The body being placed up, there was circulation in those tanks, and it could have spun her around multiple times until she finally ended up. Why she was naked and why her clothes were found at the bottom, she probably experienced hypothermia. So either she was treading water for so long and got tired that she took her clothes off, or she was experiencing hypothermia, which you would then take all your clothes off, because that's one of the symptoms, is your body and your internal heat just, it seems as if you're like burning from the inside out. So there's a lot that they explain to the crazy things that web sleuthers and people got so, you know, batshit about in the past. A lot of professionals speak to a lot of those points. Yeah.
It's
so
crazy.
I think she was having a psychotic break, and I think that she entered the water tank for some reason that we will never be able to understand unless you experience a psychotic break, you know?
Yeah, yeah. My gut...
Yeah. No, and that's about it. You know, I think that it was just a tragic accident.
Yeah.
That feels like I've gotten the most closure from your explanation than like anything else before. At the same time, like, even if we go with that, the TB test, man.
That's the one that stands out.
That's still like, that like almost brings me back to square one.
Yeah. It's impossible to deny how utterly insane that coincidence is. It's like, it can't be ignored. So as much closure, because I agree too, my gut says that's right. That's what happened. Her name's Judy Ho.
Yeah. Dr. Judy Ho.
I'm with Judy on it. But then again, there's just this tiny little itch in the back of my head. It's like, but what about, you know, X, Y, and Z, all those weird little things.
I know. I don't know if we'll ever know, I'm not going to rule out the possibility that, you know, even during her psychotic break, she actually was being chased. And I'm not going to say that's
possible.
Impossible.
No, super possible.
Yeah.
Especially where she was at. Dude, that was incredible.
Yeah. I do apologize. I feel like I felt very bad that I didn't have a spooky sense.
No, that is spooky. No answer to at least the TB test is kind of creepy still to me.
Now, this is exactly what we wanted.
Yeah.
So
I just wanted the hard facts. I wanted it broken down. You did an amazing job, like perfect, exactly what I was wishing and hoping for.
Okay.
You should have a podcast for real. I would listen.
Oh, thanks. Thank you so much. Yeah. I don't know if you, I wouldn't even know what I would talk about, honestly, but,
well, I mean,
but this was really fun. I do appreciate you letting me do this, because I feel like it's my, my shining moment where I'm like, okay, what are my strengths? And then let's type up 7 pages of notes. You know what I mean? So it was fun for me.
Awesome. Well, honestly, we'd love to have you come on again and share similar type things, because I'm too lazy. I'm not going to go in and break it down like that. and I'm not going to do it so eloquently like you did. So thank you for coming on. Thank you for taking your time and preparing throughout the week and stuff.
Agree.
Oh, no problem. It is absolutely my pleasure. Thank you guys for having me.
Any questions before we let her go?
I think I'm good.
I can't even think of any.
My brain is melted.
I have a question.
Oh.
Okay, so this wasn't necessarily like super, super spooky. It was just more interesting. But something that terrifies me to no end, right, is the criminal mind and the mind of serial killers. Or what is the turning point that makes people go from I'm a regular citizen in this world to I'm literally going to go take someone's life tonight?
Yeah.
You know, like that turning point for me is incredibly terrifying. I'm always looking at people being like, you're a weird motherfucker, aren't you? You know what I mean? Like, and sorry for cussing, but I'm like, you're just different and there's something off about you kind of thing. You know, when you could just tell?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just really want to know. But anyway, so if you did have me back on, I would love to speak to about something that truly terrifies me. And that would be the mind of, you know, some of these terrible people. Not that I'm an expert at it at all. It's just, I'm absolutely fascinated by the subject. One in particular that I'm thinking of is named Israel Keyes. And I kind of have a little joke that he's my favorite serial killer. But that's not to say that I appreciate his work at all.
Have you guys heard of Israel Keyes at all?
No.
I think so.
Heather is like broken down Israel to me, and he was like the other thing where I was like, dude, you need to come on and like teach us about Israel.
Is he a black dude, cult leader?
No.
Then no.
Okay, don't look anything up in the meantime.
Okay.
Let Heather break it down.
If you see anything on the internet, just move right on past.
Dude, Sean, put your phone away. dude, thank you so much. Anything you want to plug?
Anything I want to plug? Yeah, I want to plug my beautiful mother. She's sitting close to you guys right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful for her because I'm pretty sure I got a lot of her looks.
Hey, yo.
And a lot of her genetics. And I couldn't be more grateful. Aww. So shout out to my mom. And shout out to my siblings. Oh, if you guys remember, last time I was on, I believe, I was with my girlfriend, Madison O'Neill, who is the owner and creator of Made Ceramics. So if you look up Made Ceramics on Instagram, you can see all of Madison's beautiful little pottery.
Sean, can you grab a mug?
Her website in the bio.
Sorry, say that last part because I was so rude.
And there's a link to her website in the bio.
Show that right up in the camera. Hold on. Try to get it to focus.
Oh, there it goes. Nice.
So Maddie made these beautiful mugs. She's an incredible potter, ceramicist. Yeah, so hit up the link and go support. Last thing before I let you go, very last thing. Mm-hmm. Any update on your pervy roommate? Not Maddie, the ghost.
Oh, gosh. So last time we talked about how Madison saw Ray crawling on the ground, that happened to me the other night. No joke. Oh. Like, it was one of the scariest moments. I don't usually get scared by Ray, but I got scared by that.
Okay.
Wait. I didn't hear that. Wait.
Cliffhanger. Is that new? Share it next time.
Oh, my gosh.
I like legit am kind of watering up at the thought of somebody crawling in my house.
No bueno. Yep. No me gusta, dude. Okay, will you come on and share that next time? Sometime soon?
That and your thoughts with the turning point.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes, okay. Absolutely, I will. Thank you so much, guys, for having me.
All right, sister. Love you so much. Love Thanks you, for Heather. Coming on.
See ya.
Love you, too.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye.
Hello, this is Dr. Grande, the host of True Crime Psychology and Personality. On my podcast, I explore and explain the pathology behind some of the most horrendous crimes and those who commit them. We discuss topics like narcissism, psychopathy, sociopathy, and antisocial personality disorder from a scientifically informed perspective. What is a narcissist? How do you spot a sociopath? What signs can you look for to protect yourself from these dangerous personalities? It's not just about the stories, but also the science and psychology behind them. So if you're interested in true crime or mental health, I'd encourage you to give my show a listen wherever you get podcasts.
My name is Bill Huffman, and I am a former Cleveland news producer, and I am now the host of the podcast Who Killed? I began the show focusing on the unsolved murder of Amy Mihaljevic, and now each week I explore a different case with a focus on some of the victims who don't get the attention they deserve. I have a deep catalog of over 225 episodes, so there is a guarantee there will be something for you. Who Killed is an Evergreen podcast, Killer Podcasts, and Slow Burn Media production. Subscribe today wherever you get your favorite shows.